What's up, NFL fans?
Connor McCarthy here with my co-host Blake Pace, as always. And today we're joined with a special guest, Eli Jennings. He joined us a couple weeks ago, but made some rather atrocious comments about a Titans player. We'll get into that later. How are we doing today, guys?
Not bad, not bad. Good first weekend of football. I know we went 2-2 in our picks. I'll pick the same four teams. Unfortunately, we'll look to get our picks right back on there, but it should be another good week of football.
Yeah, I think you're just excited to be tied with me after losing the regular season so poorly.
I did blow a 3-1 lead.
How about you, Eli? How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. I'm excited to talk some football. Thank you for having me back on.
Yeah, for those of you who forgot, Eli is unfortunately a Patriots fan, and I know we all hate talking to Patriots fans when it comes to playoff time, so we'll get into the Patriots later and a bunch of other things, but let's... I think Blake wants to do his segment with the numbers and everything.
I do. So this is episode 17. Before we start, Connor is not allowed to say Alshon Jeffrey.
That's just not fair.
Eli gave him that one.
It's just not fair.
So let's let any other 17s that you can think of that currently wear. We got a few quarterbacks, some good wide receivers.
Well, Blake, usually I can name one or two before we get into this, but Eli, unfortunately, stole Alshon Jeffrey from me, and he also mentioned that Brian Shore, quarterback of JMU, is 17, so that's a big name out there. But I am terrible at numbers, as everyone has come to know on this show. So,
any 17s from you, Eli, that you could think of?
Does Carson Wentz wear 17?
No, he does not.
Oh.
No. But, okay, so let's look at quarterbacks first. This quarterback...
Wait, Alshon Jeffrey and Carson Wentz are on the same team. How could they both be 17? You gave Alshon Jeffrey. You don't even deserve that anymore. All right, keep going.
This quarterback missed the entire season. Torn ACL, I think, in August. AFC East quarterback.
Ryan Tannehill.
Ryan Tannehill wears number 17. Yeah. This quarterback almost made it into the playoffs. In the AFC.
Philip Rivers.
Great quarterback.
You know, I always had a deep feeling that it was him, but I didn't want to be embarrassed once again.
And then one of my favorite quarterbacks to pick on, Denver, Houston, Cleveland.
Brock Osweiler
wears 17.
The man himself.
Some other receivers that I like, Devontae Adams wears 17, Kamar Aiken, Chris Conley, Devin Funchess, Dontrell Inman, like we mentioned, Alshon Jeffrey, Kellen Moore. Wears 17.
That's a real stud right
there. Eli Rogers, Mike Wallace, Robert Woods, and Nelson Agholor. So
they were actually...
Nelson Agholor wore it last season. He does no longer wear 17.
I guess 17 is like the number for good but not great receivers.
Yeah,
I feel like that's what that is.
And then some all-time greats, Jake Delhomme, big Jake Delhomme guy. Braylon Edwards... Plaxico Burress, Jason Campbell.
Braylon Edwards used to be one of my favorite players when I was a kid.
One of my favorite receivers with the Colts, Austin Colley. Unfortunately, I don't know where he is. So many concussions throughout his career, but small slot receiver that Peyton Manning loved. I like that list of 17s. I don't think they're that bad. You know, maybe one of these days we'll get to a number that, you know,
Maybe. I don't know. That's a good one. You said Colley had a lot of concussions in his career. Well, it seems to be a theme for wide receivers that go out of the slot for Peyton Manning.
Yeah.
Wes Welker, thinking of all other things.
Colley.
Maybe that's we should look into that more one day.
But, what's he doing?
Yeah, exactly. So I think we'll get into our subjects now, guys.
Sounds
good. Ready? All right. So I'm excited for this first one today. Earlier we were debating who are the top five wide receivers going into next year. That's excluding this season. We're not talking about how great someone was this season. We're talking about going into next year, talent-wise, who elevates their team the most. So who wants to start first, guys?
Eli.
Let's go with the guest.
All right, well, should I go fifth to first?
Yeah, five to one.
Fifth to first.
Five
okay.
One. Okay, yeah. Number five. This is the only one I have on here that's perhaps a little... A little controversial. Michael Thomas for the New Orleans Saints. I think the third year receiver development, I think next year he's going to hit that. I think that's going to be, continuing to evolve as Drew Brees' number one option, sort of like the standalone guy in that role down there. He was the only one looking up and down the list of this year's top performers that I really see. He was up there this past year, and I think he only...
Well, it made his game. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
This next one. Then after that, I had DeAndre Hopkins. 13 TDs this year. Really great showing with Deshaun Watson. Hopefully healthy for all of next year. It'll be fun to see what he can do. Number three, Odell Beckham Jr. Once he returns. We'll see what happens with the New York Giants. I know we're going to talk about that later. But just the sheer raw talent he is. I don't think you can have a conversation about the three best receivers in the league and not mention him.
You're definitely right.
And then for me, this was the trickiest part because I'm a big Julio fan. Love Julio Jones. I've always considered him the best receiver in the NFL. Just on, in terms of like what he can do. If you put the ball out there, he just finds a way to catch it. And just such a sheer physical product. But I put him second because time and time again, somehow, even though, like, if you were to, like, compare the two of them by based on the way they look just standing there, I mean, Julio's way more imposing. But Antonio Brown is just really good at football. And he, year in, year out, he always does it. And I'm going to count on him to do it again next year. That's my guy at number one, Antonio Brown.
Solid list. Blake?
So, yeah, I totally see what you're saying with Michael Thomas. I probably had him around my seven. I was thinking about him, T.Y. maybe, right, going into those top five. But who I put at number five, in my opinion, is A.J. Green. You know, he's playing with Andy Dalton in an offense that was kind of up and down this year, but I think A.J. Green is a stud receiver. He still had over 1,000 yards this year, 8,000 yards in his career. Catch percentage was a little down, but, I mean, he's another guy that I don't think is too old yet. I mean, he's 29 years old. He's still got some juice in him, and hopefully if Cincinnati can figure out that offense a little going into this season, they can get him going. At number four, just like you said, DeAndre Hopkins for me. I'd love to see DeAndre Hopkins with a full season with a, you know, a great quarterback that can get him the ball. He has unfortunately had to play with some terrible quarterbacks, you know, Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of guys that have gone through there. And then you get Deshaun Watson and you see that offense just click and all of a sudden Watson's down and then you're back to Tom Savage for the rest of the season. So DeAndre Hopkins is my number four. Another guy that I think, you know, next season, he's only going to be 26 and he can take that game with Deshaun Watson to a whole nother level. This is where you guys aren't going to like me. So at three, I have Julio Jones. And I, like you said, all the reasons there, you know, I completely agree with you. He's a freak of nature. And, you know, actually, you know, when I talk about these three, because I agree with you, you know, the top three, Odell, Antonio, Julio, I think I'm going to just skip to my number one and say that Odell Beckham Jr. is the best wide receiver in football. And, yes, he missed all this season, so I'm, you know, unfortunately we have to see can he come back health-wise. But what does Odell Beckham Jr. not have that Antonio Brown and Julio Jones do have? A quarterback who can get them the ball deep. All of Odell's passes or receptions last year were all based off slants and short routes because Eli Manning couldn't get him the ball deep. You know, it was a bunch of catch and run. And, you know, like I said, this year he was hurt, banged up. But over 1,300 yards from scrimmage in all three seasons, he is 25 years old. I think that people kind of forget his talent just because, you know, they don't have much success, but and they think, oh, well, Eli Manning's a great quarterback. He has been. He's got two Super Bowls. But if you look at him this year, it was kind of the same thing last year, except they had Odell. Like, Eli Manning did not look good this year at all. He looked terrible. You know, he was kind of playing at that same level last year. It was just that he had an Odell Beckham Jr. that he could throw the ball 5 yards and then have Odell, you know, make an 80-yard cut to the end zone. So I have Odell at number one. Antonio Brown's my number two. Like I said, that's, you know, he's, you know, standing next to Julio Jones doesn't look like, you know, you would take Antonio Brown, but he just gets the job done, and he's got so many different routes that he can run. Mm-hmm. I think that's another thing when you take in a Julio Jones. He's got kind of three simple routes that he can go. Antonio Brown can, you know, just run about every route in football and get a job done. So, yeah, my top five, Odell, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, DeAndre Hopkins, and A.J. Green.
That's another solid list. I actually had a more varying list than I thought from y'all two, but I do want to say before I talk about my list, Michael Thomas, he is a very underrated receiver, and over his first 2 years, more receptions than pretty much anybody. I think it was the most receptions in the NFL for a guy in his first 2 years, And a lot of guys, we see sophomore slumps a lot in a lot of different positions. It doesn't have to just be wide receivers, quarterbacks, a lot of different people. Then there's a third-year spike that a lot of people talk about in the NFL. So Michael Thomas could elevate his game even more next year, and then we can talk about him being one of the top three receivers and things like that. Unfortunately, he's not on my list, so I'll get into that. My number five pick was Keenan Allen, which neither of y'all said, I was a little surprised. Keenan Allen is an excellent receiver, and a lot of people have a lot of doubts about him, especially fantasy owners after the past couple years when Keenan Allen goes down with a season-ending injury. And we don't hear a lot about him over the offseason and everything, but every time that Keenan Allen is on the field, he is Phillip Rivers' go-to receiver, and there's a reason for that. No one gets open more than Keenan Allen from the slot, I'd have to say. I mean, he creates separation in routes that I don't really see out of a lot of receivers. Even the Odells and the Antonio Browns, they create separation, but on a consistency standpoint, I see Keenan Allen getting open every play that I watch him, and usually he's given 100%, and he makes ridiculous catches, just as many as those as the top receivers in the game, like Antonio and Odell. It just, his name isn't as big right now because of the injuries he's faced in his career. He had 1,393 yards, 102 receptions this year, and 6 touchdowns. That's third in the league in receiving yards behind Julio and Antonio Brown, who were both guys above him on this list. But I just want to give Keenan Allen some love. I think he's a great receiver. In the AJ Green was the other receiver that I was debating between Keenan Allen and AJ to be the number five spot. After that, I have number four. I have Julio Jones number four now. And as much love as I have for Julio, and I've said it so many times this year, that Julio Jones is the best player in the Falcons, one of the best receivers in the league. He has a great quarterback. He has, or at least a very good quarterback, you know? He has Matt Ryan to throw to him and everything. And I know we want to put a lot of the blame on the offensive coordinator and everything, but at some point, DeAndre Hopkins is catching the ball from Tom Savage. He's getting spoon-fed. Don't get me wrong. He is getting spoon-fed. But Julio Jones had 3 touchdowns this year. He was one of the top receivers in yardage and everything. But there's some other receivers that are making a bigger impact right now. So that's why I have Julio at number 4. He's still one of the best in the game. Don't get me wrong in any doubt. Number 3, I have DeAndre Hopkins, purely over the circumstances that he's had to overcome with the quarterbacks he's had to play with. Besides Deshaun Watson, which just elevated DeAndre Hopkins even more. And that's what good receivers are supposed to do. They're supposed to elevate bad quarterbacks and make good quarterbacks look even better. So DeAndre Hopkins, some of the catches he made the catch of the year this year a couple weeks ago. It was so that was one of Christmas the best catches Day? I've yeah I think it was Christmas Day. It was one of the best catches I've ever seen in my life. It's right up there with the Odell catch that made him the big time. So DeAndre Hopkins, definitely a great receiver. Number 2, I have Odell Beckham, and no one makes a bigger impact when he's on the field. The reason I have him at number 2, not number 1, first off, I love Antonio Brown, and he's amazing and amazes me every week. But Odell, he's also a sideline distraction. He really is a sideline distraction, and that can be a little bit detrimental to a team occasionally. We've seen it this year where he's lost it on the sideline, even though Antonio Brown did lose it one time this year. But you don't see it as consistently. And when Odell's got his head straight, I think he is the most talented receiver in this league. You're right. Eli Manning is not getting him the ball down the field. It's all Odell when he does stuff. And the offense looks a million times better. And you cannot say that about a lot of receivers in this league that makes an offense look so much better when he's on the field. So Odell is definitely talented, but I have Antonio Brown at number 1 because, I mean, the sure consistency and level of play. I mean, he's a sideline wizard. You don't see people making the type of catches he does, and especially at his height. Antonio Brown is just the best, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think all of our lists relatively the same. Like, I didn't even think about Keenan Allen. And I guess you're right. It's kind of just that injury thing. Yeah. Where you kind of, when I kind of
there's such
of
a
him,
stigma.
I think of,
yeah, there's such a stigma.
Because think about how fantasy football has changed the way you think about the game now. Mm-hmm. I mean, if your wide receiver doesn't get your points, you think less of him. Mm-hmm. And you're right, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. But when he is on there, he's one of the best receivers in football. Yeah. I also, like I said, with Michael Thomas, you know, this third year is going to be great for him. And it's unfortunate to, or maybe it's not unfortunate, but the offense also this season wasn't tailored to the passing game. Mm-hmm. You know, with Alvin Kamara and Mark Ingram, it's run, 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 run. You know, pass to Kamara out of the backfield, hit Ted Ginn for one deep pass. So you haven't even seen the full arsenal of Michael Thomas. And so, you know, he, you know, maybe it's with whatever next quarterback comes into New Orleans that is, you know, a great deep threat or a great passer, and they get away from the run game, you're going to see him elevate his game even more. And he's definitely one of the bright stars that is young in the league.
Yeah, Michael Thomas is really, really a guy I look to take that next step very soon, like I said. And it's interesting, one of the players, I did think about Keenan Allen, and funny enough, it is true, you know, I've had him in fantasy before, and it's like, he gets injured.
You had it in the back of your mind, you're spiteful.
Yeah,
it's okay.
I had him this year, and you know, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, he was pretty good this year.
Yeah, I do tend to put a lot of emphasis on, you know, someone's ability to stay on the field. And so hopefully, you know, going forward, Keenan Allen continues to do that because he is one of those guys. Yeah. The one that really interested me was AJ Green because I just, almost tend to overlook him in a way.
A lot of people do. Yeah. It's not just you.
He's got some similarities to guys like Andre Johnson, even like Calvin Johnson, just people who are good their whole career, but just never really kind of due to the team they were on. Yeah. He's never really been in the spotlight like
exactly.
that.
I mean, you never really see him in the playoffs that often. They don't get playoff wins. Cincinnati hasn't won a playoff game. They've made it a few times, but, you know, yeah, he's one of those guys. It's just not a great team, so you overlook it a lot. But he is a stud, and he's one of the biggest reasons that offense has remained somewhat relevant.
And before we get into our next subject, just two things real quick. One person that the level of parity in the NFL and the constantly changing league, it's funny that you look at the wide receivers 3-4 years ago, this list would have been completely different, 100% mm-hmm. different. You look 3-4 years ago, quarterback list is pretty much the same. Over the past, like, 10 years, you look at Drew Brees is up there, Tom Brady's up there, Aaron Rodgers is up there, Ben Roethlisberger's up there, Philip Rivers is probably up there. This list doesn't really change, but the wide receiver list completely is different. I mean, Demaryius Thomas might have been a top receiver like 2-3 years ago. Yeah. Someone might have debated he's number one, number two receiver in the mm-hmm. league. Look how far he's dropped off since not having Peyton Manning anymore.
Exactly.
So the level of play that quarterbacks, they can really help a receiver. That's why DeAndre Hopkins wouldn't surprise me if 2 years down the road, Deshaun Watson is what we think he is. Maybe DeAndre Hopkins becomes the number one receiver in the NFL. It's a matter of circumstances, and I just think that it's cool to look at what different people's varying views of what the best receiver in the NFL is and look at it over the years. So I think that's enough about receivers for a little bit. We'll go on to the next subject. Last week, me and Blake talked about the Browns organization and things that we could really do to help them and make them a better organization going forward. This week, we're going to go with the Giants. So how would you fix the Giants organization, guys, and what would your plans be for next year?
So, I really like this subject, and like we did it last week, because I'm big on the NFL draft, do a lot of scouting and film watching, and so I really think that this year the Giants have a great position to, you know, make another leap going forward. There are two ways that I think they can go about in this draft, depending on their future with Eli Manning. I really think that the UCLA quarterback, Josh Rosen, is a great fit for the New York Giants, and I think that that's who I'd love to see take over that franchise. You know, there are free agent quarterbacks, and that was a topic we discussed about last week. There's a ton of free agent quarterbacks this year, but I don't really think of the Giants as going out and trying to get someone older. I think there's something nice about pairing a young stud receiver like Odell with a young quarterback to have sustained success for both of their entire careers. So I think, you know, they should put that number two pick on quarterback Josh Rosen. Another thing that I think that they should do is, you know, put all of their investment into getting Matt Patricia to become their next head coach. Right now it kind of seems like it's Matt Patricia's between becoming the head coach of the Detroit Lions or the New York Giants. Well, both are intriguing jobs, and I understand one of them has Matt Stafford and the other has Eli Manning. I think Bill Belichick's time in New York and how much he valued that is something that he would go and talk to Matt Patricia about and convince him to take over as the new face of the Giants. And it's kind of just one of those true organizations that through history is one of the most, you know, prominent organizations in football. And I think, you know, they have offensive weapons. They have great, you know, Evan Ingram was great, Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham Jr. They got work on the offensive line and running back position and quarterback to figure out. But I think that right now there are a lot of players on the defense who regressed this past season. And I think the best way to get them back to their play 2 years ago, when I thought they were one of the best defenses in football, is to bring in a great defensive-minded coach. And Matt Patricia, I think, would be able to bring that mentality back into the defense of New York. The only third and final thing I would say is maybe investing, you know, a second-round pick or, you know, trading a pick for one of these young running backs. Running backs now in the draft seem to be growing on trees. You can get Alvin Kamara in the third round. You can get all these guys in the later round. We even talked about this, you know, I want to say months ago, about how you can find running backs so late in the draft. And I think that the Giants are hesitant to take a running back in the draft, but, and you know, for some reason they haven't had much success in drafting some over the past few years. But I think that there's plenty of crap. You take any running back from Georgia, I think, even. There's three of them there.
Yeah.
So I think when looking at the Giants organization, they need a head coach, defensive-minded. I think Matt Patricia is great for that because I think they have a lot of defensive potential that has regressed over the last year. He can elevate that. I believe that you move forward with Josh Rosen as your new franchise quarterback for the Giants, and maybe you don't start him next year. Maybe you keep Eli Manning and get one last year out of him. teach Rosen on the bench, kind of like what Pat Mahomes is doing with Alex Smith in Kansas City. And, you know, you just got to turn it around from there. You know, they had such a weird transition from being a playoff team 2 years ago to the second pick in the draft this year. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, next season with the right staff and the right quarterback and a healthy Odell Beckham Jr., that they're close to the playoff picture again.
Yeah. So I was going to say, running back has been a problem for the Giants for a long time and everything. And like you said, you can get really good talent late in drafts. We've seen it before. But, you know, recently some of the running backs that have been chosen in the first round have really made huge impacts on the team. You look at Zeke, you look at Todd Gurley, you look at even Melvin Gordon, even though he was labeled a bust for the first year. He's been pretty good ever since. So teams aren't missing as much as they used to, I think, on running backs. And surefire talents like Saquon Barkley and stuff like that, I'm really leaning towards that for the Giants this next year, because it's been a problem for so long, and it's going to elevate everyone around you. When you get a really talented running back, 8 men in the box is a huge thing to have as a quarterback, and it might extend Eli Manning's career for another year if he stays with the Giants. Who knows what's going on with that after all the controversy that went down with it. So I think they should keep Eli for one more year, get a running back, maybe Saquon Barkley early in the draft, and then get a quarterback in the second round possibly, or take a quarterback, like you said, in the first round as well. They definitely need one to sit behind Eli for at least a year. I think Eli has a lot to give to a young quarterback, and they have enough talent around him on offense with Evan Ingram, Odell Beckham if he's healthy, to get one more year of Eli, maybe not doing as great, but that defense, like you said, it can carry them again like it was 2 years ago. And keep in mind, I mean, there are so many free agents on that defense. There's a lot of free agents that the Giants have picked up over the years. And it could be hard to get all those players to really have a lot of chemistry. We've seen, like, a lot of locker room drama recently with the cornerbacks, Eli Apple, Landon Collins. We've seen a lot of drama in that. And that's not a good thing for a court coach to have to come in and deal with. So it wouldn't surprise me as soon as the head coach is named and everything, if they maybe cut Eli Apple immediately, or we'll see if they take a different round. It's like, no, we're a team and we can work this through. Because we've seen some varying comments from different cornerbacks and safeties, such as a lot from Landon Collins as of late about Eli Apple, saying he was a cancer on the team, and then taking his words back and saying that he wants him back next year. Yeah. It's been really confusing, and who knows what's really going on in that Giants locker room. I wish I had a backstage pass to see all this going on. But yeah, the Giants are really a mess for a team that has as much talent as it has and could clearly be a competitor next year if they get some of their stuff together. So I don't think the Giants are in that much trouble, and if anything, this number two selection in the draft could benefit their organization for years if they nail it right.
Yeah, for me the biggest thing is, and I think they're going to do what Blake said probably and get a quarterback, probably Josh Rosen, but there's a reason that Manning hasn't been terribly... Well, there's a variety of reasons. But Manning gets hit more than anybody. It's always been that way. Their offensive line just isn't good. That also kind of has a little bit to do with why they can't get a run game going. So, bringing in a young quarterback is going to drive up ticket sales. It's going to make the fans happy. It's going to be very exciting. But if you throw him to the wolves like that, it's not going to work out. And if I had that number two pick, I'm taking the best offensive lineman in the draft, and I'm really going to try and start building there from the ground up. Because the reality is, yes, they have Odell Beckham, they have some explosive weapons on offense, but they're not built to contend right now. There's no way. Philadelphia is on the upswing. The Cowboys, if they can get themselves together in the offseason, are definitely a team that's much better positioned to make a run. Right now they're looking at maybe fighting for third in their division. It just makes more sense to build something that would be sustainable and really try and come back as a multidimensional team. Because if you throw a quarterback in there right now, yes, he's going to have some highlight plays to Odell Beckham, and maybe they get to 8-8, but they're not going to go far in the postseason until they can run the ball. They're not going to be able to do that until they have an offensive line.
Well, I'd have to disagree for one thing. You made up some good points and everything, but I think the Giants, I think they had a complete organizational breakdown this year, and it was something that was just, it started in the beginning of the year when they lost a couple games, and then everything started melting down. Receivers got hurt. A bunch of different things happened. I think that they are, I know the NFC East is a very competitive division now, and there's so much talent that's going on, and it really scares me as a Redskin fan to see what's going to happen in the years. Are the Eagles going to become a dynasty or something with Carson Wentz, which clearly could happen. The Cowboys could have a great year next year with Zeke coming back. I mean, even the Redskins, if they somehow keep Kirk Cousins, we have a pretty good offense and our defense is improving. The Giants fell off this year, but I always know that they can come back just as strong the next year. I mean, their defense was so good 2 years ago, or not this year, but the year before, and their offense wasn't as good, but when Odell was on that team, it's a completely different unit. It really is. And I do like how Blake said when Odell was his number one receiver and everything, he does have more of an impact than anybody in the NFL when it comes to a receiver standpoint when he's on his team and the offense looking different, because without him, Eli was throwing to some people this year that I had never heard of, and I think a lot of NFL fans had never heard of. So if they get their receivers back, they have Sterling Shepard, Evan Ingram, Odell Beckham, rather than throwing Javarius King out there, then I think the Giants will look way different, and they could compete next year. Now, like you said, I don't think they should throw a quarterback out there. I don't think they should throw a young rookie quarterback. I think they need a proven veteran like Eli, or maybe get another Josh McCown or something, put somebody out there for 1 year, a transition bridge quarterback, to get one of their young QBs to start making it, because it's not going to be Geno Smith. Definitely not going to be him. So maybe draft a young QB and start developing him now, and hope that you're as competitive as you can be next year, and then really look to the next season to be the best.
Yeah, and I'm going to agree with either their offensive line is terrible. Eric Flowers is not a tackle in this NFL. He's, you know, I would be surprised if he finds a job next season in the NFL. Maybe as a backup, but even then. So offensive line definitely is a point of emphasis for them this offseason. And if they choose to both skip on quarterback and running back, I think those are two positions that would seem more enticing to me than the offensive line. I think that's something that you can find similar talent in the second and third round, maybe at offensive line and also in free agency. The only last thing that I would add with the Giants is on the defensive side of the ball, I like their D-line. I like their secondary. They need help in the middle, specifically inside linebacker. And I think that's something they address maybe in free agency if they realize that that's a problem. I mean, there's a couple guys I'm looking at. Navarro Bowman will be a free agent. He just spent the rest of his season in Oakland. Maybe that's a guy you want to go over. Kevin Minter, Demario Davis with the Jets, Carlos Dansby. He's getting a little old, but maybe that's a good presence in the locker room. So I think there are a few guys inside linebacker, but that's the only change I'd want to make on the defense. But yeah, they're one of those teams that could easily just turn things around just as quickly as they fell off this past year.
Yep, it's just all about getting the right coach and having the players have the right mindset, I think.
Yeah.
So on to our next subject. In week 5, Ben Roethlisberger threw for 312 yards, but threw 5 interceptions against the Jacksonville defense, threw for 0 touchdowns. Possibly the worst game of Big Ben's career. Definitely the worst game of the season for him.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Big Ben took off, and he was almost in the MVP conversation by the end of the year. So, will Jacksonville make Big Ben look bad again?
I don't think they'll make Big Ben look bad again, and I'm going to toss it up more towards I think this week is going to be the Le'Veon Bell show. Ooh. Against Jacksonville. One of the flaws with Jacksonville's defense is being able to stop the run. And LeSean McCoy, while he was on one leg, had a pretty decent game against the Jags this past week. Also, when they last faced, Le'Veon Bell was not... he was, you know, fresh off missing a few weeks, missing all of the summer. And so, you know, his legs, he wasn't in NFL form yet. You know, he's had a full season now, and he'll attack that one weakness of Jacksonville in stopping the run. And I think he could explode for, you know... Combined, you know, if you want me to throw out a number, I think receiving yards and rushing yards, I think he could go for maybe 170 combined. I really think that this is going to be his game. Like you said, those linebackers, you know, had trouble, you know, at some time stopping LeSean McCoy. So I think he can, you know, make a miss a few times. I would be a little worried throwing in the direction of Ramsey and Bouye. But like you said, Big Ben, that was, you know, his outlier game of the season, really, and has really turned things around. So I don't think he'll look bad by any means, and I think that might be more towards them tailoring the game towards Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. With Antonio Brown now fully healthy and Bell's there, they're clicking on all cylinders. I think the biggest thing for them will be to not get ahead of themselves, not focus on the Patriots for next week, and just apply themselves while they're here, and I don't think it's going to be any problem. The secondary is really good, but considering how Jacksonville's offense has performed, give Big Ben enough opportunities, and at some point, you know, Le'Veon breaks one big, Antonio Brown finds a way to get open. I don't think they should be that worried, and I think, like you said, make Le'Veon the focus, wait for Antonio Brown to do what he does and make some crazy plays, and they'll be good to go.
Yeah. I definitely don't think Ben Roethlisberger is going to repeat what he did in Week 5, I mean, by any means. I think he may throw for a touchdown or two. He has a decent game. Like you said, I think Le'Veon Bell's going to be the main show. I mean, Big Ben's no Jimmy Garoppolo, am I right? I mean, like, Jimmy Garoppolo seems to be the only one that can destroy the Jacksonville defense. I'll be honest. All right. But whatever. I have to agree with both of you on this. And if it weren't for Blake Bortles being slightly faster than the Bills linebackers last week, I don't know how that game would have ended up. Because, like I've said all season, Blake Bortles is the only reason that Jacksonville could not make it to the Super Bowl or something like that. Blake says every week that Jacksonville is the best defense possibly of all time. It's one of the best. So I really think that that's going to be their downfall in this one, and Big Ben isn't going to have to throw that much. I think it's just going to be they get a couple touchdowns early with Le'Veon Bell and just grind the clock away, give him 30-plus touches like they did all in the regular season. Antonio Brown makes a screen catch, goes for a couple yards, and just run the clock out once you have a big lead. I don't think this game will be that close particularly. I just don't see much coming out of the Jacksonville offense.
Yeah, and exactly. And that's all they need to do is get ahead early. You know, mm-hmm. score 10 points in the first quarter yep. and a half, maybe even in the first half get 10, and I think you're going to be set. To just run the ball out the second half and waste the clock. The only thing that is interesting to me is that Pittsburgh's secondary is really banged up right now. They just lost in practice today Artie Burns, who was drafted last season. They just lost him to a non-contact injury, and it doesn't look like he's going to be playing this week. So, I don't know. I like some of the receivers in Jacksonville. I like who's the rookie they've got from Oklahoma.
D.D. Westbrook.
I like him. Marquise Lee's had a good year. Keenan Cole, Marquise Lee. They're missing
Allen Hurns.
They're missing Allen Robinson, which is a huge miss. But I still think that these receivers can potentially get open, especially if this Steelers secondary is hurt like it should be.
And you're 100% right. There is talent on the Jacksonville offense. There really is Leonard Fournette, even their backup, running backs, Chris Ivory. I mean, they have talent everywhere. So, I mean, it's really not a matter of that. So, honestly, I just think that it's a matter of Blake Bortles just not living up to what he was supposed to be when they took him in the first round all those years ago. I mean, they thought they could just get by with Bortles being inept and just leaning on that running game. But good NFL teams make adjustments. And when you're just purely playing to make Blake Bortles beat you, I don't know if they can. And if Ryan Shazier was still in the Steelers and healthy right now, there was no shot that Blake Bortles is running for 88 yards.
No, that's definitely true.
So, I think we'll go on to our next one. This one, I really wanted to look forward to talking to because especially we have Eli in the house. Is there any way for the Titans to beat the Patriots? And the player that Eli was talking a lot of trash about the other day was Derrick Henry. Eli somehow thinks that Derrick Henry is too one-dimensional. I'm going to let Eli speak first before we start getting into this.
Well, I just want to establish what I'm saying here. Derrick Henry is a fine NFL running back, and he had an excellent performance last week. I mean, that was an awesome game. He, 23 touches, 156 yards, 2 TDs. He ran very well. He had a great game, and more power to him. I had just heard multiple people talking about how Derrick Henry's the next big thing. Derrick Henry's going to be an elite NFL running back. And that's just not the case. He could turn into something, yes. But if you look at his stats, if you look at what he's done, that just doesn't. That's not next up. The week before this past game, okay, he ran 28 times for 51 yards, and he tore into the Chiefs last week, and he had a good game then. But I'll read you, okay? The last 4 games of the season, this is Derrick Henry: 8 carries, 26 yards. 7 carries, 19 yards. 8 carries, 25 yards. And then 28 carries, 51 yards. He's played 31 games in his career, and he has 24 receptions. And it's because he's not a pass-catching back. Yes, he can. He's capable of it. But he's not skilled. And in order to be an elite running back in today's offense, if you're going to be Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson, or even Deion Lewis has looked amazing this year. I mean, he's elite in my point of view. I don't think that Derrick Henry is that. If you want to say he's a starting caliber running back, all right, maybe. But you better have another running back.
All right, I'll start this one up. So, Eli, would you agree Adrian Peterson is an elite running back? He was a very elite running back, right?
No.
I just want to make sure. I'm just going to get that basis. How good of a pass catcher was AP?
He wasn't
solidly below average. He was pretty solidly below average. He couldn't pass protect worth a crap either, but he was still an elite back. This is from Matt Harmon. He's one of my favorite writers. He's NFLwriter.com. So this is, Derrick Henry is more elusive than you might think. The Titans' offense looked more exciting than it had in months during Tennessee's win over the Chiefs in the wild card round. To surprise a few, it came with Henry leading the charge. The second-year back has quietly been one of the best at his position all season in limited action. Henry ranked 9th in Pro Football Focus elusive ratings among running backs with elite 25% of their team's rushing attempts. What's striking about this is that massive Henry weighs 247 pounds, while all other running backs in the top 11 scores above 55 weigh an average of 209.6 pounds. So you have a massive running back running with the power that Derrick Henry has that's also elusive and can catch the ball. I don't care how well he can catch the ball. He's Alfred Morris out there.
He has 24 receptions.
I understand that, but you have DeMarco. He's not even the starting running back. He's not meant for that. When he's in there, he's meant to pound the rock. He hasn't gotten those opportunities.
Thank you.
But when he has the job to be the number one running back, he will have to have more passing opportunities. As soon as DeMarco Murray is completely off that team, Derrick Henry will take over, and maybe he has as many catches as Adrian Peterson has a year, but that can still lead to being an elite running back.
Yeah, but he's not Adrian Peterson.
Okay, well, I'm not saying he's Adrian Peterson, but he is definitely a very good running back and has the chance to be elite, and I think he will be one day.
The thing, and I love how you – I'm totally on your side with this, Connor. I like everything you said about that. Like, his size, like, you should not be that fast.
Yeah, you should not be this fast.
It should be physically impossible. He's got some great long strides. He has one of the longest strides, I think, of any running back in football. And that just creates an unbelievable top speed when he's got breakaway runs. The thing that we get to talk about Tennessee now is crazy because so many people were calling for Mike Mularkey to be fired, and he should be fired. He should not be the head coach there because he is playing... He chooses to play DeMarco Murray over Derrick Henry every week of this season until until it was like physically impossible for DeMarco Murray to play. Go ahead.
Okay. And in one instance, he ran 28 times for 51 yards
against the Jaguars defense. And I know that they're not as good against the run and everything, but that team is still elusive. And Mariota has been terrible at quarterback this year. I mean, very bad. So
the offensive line is not that great either.
In my mind, he's LeGarrette Blount. I think that's who he is.
He's so much faster.
That's where he's going. But you can't have him in there when it's a passing situation because he can't pass protect. He can physically catch a ball, but he's not going to make anybody miss, like catching the ball, doing all that. Like, he's a fine NFL running back, but he's not elite. Okay. He's not elite.
No, I'm not saying he's elite yet. He definitely has the potential, and he's a very good running back right now. I think he's better than what LeGarrette Blount is, was.
So, okay, a full season of Derrick Henry as your main running back.
Yes.
This is the reason DeMarco Murray's been in the game.
Yeah, no, DeMarco Murray is a very good running back, and I don't know if he's that good anymore. Last year he had a good year. I'm not talking about this year. He looked bad this year. I think Derrick Henry should have been starter. But once Mike Mularkey started realizing that Derrick Henry was taking over and he's clearly the future of the backfield.
There's a problem that comes when guys are good in certain spots and then we sort of project them like, okay, he's going to be elite. Like, remember a few years ago, Jeremy Hill had an amazing year. It's like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to be amazing. It's like, no, he's just good in this situation that they put him in.
I sincerely think that's interesting, Jeremy Hill. Because, you know what? For years, I thought Giovanni Bernard should have been the running back in Cincinnati because his one year, he had a great year, and then Jeremy Hill came and took the job for some reason, unbeknownst to me, because every time Giovanni Bernard is the lead back in Cincinnati, he looks like the best running back.
Yeah.
Even though Joe Mixon's really good, I'm not going to go into that.
No, okay. But, there's different comparisons you can make. Like, Jonathan Stewart, D'Angelo Williams. When Jonathan Stewart finally became the man, it was like, all right, but He's not that good. All right,
so look, I watch a lot of football. I know both of you do too. And there's certain times I feel like as an NFL fan or an NFL analyst, you see guys and they just have an it factor. They just have that factor where you see that other running backs in that situation, you don't see happen very much. Derrick Henry, I've seen several times where he will juke somebody, carry another guy on his back, get him off him, and then go from 4 more yards or something like that. I don't see that out of a lot of running backs. You don't see that out of many running backs in the NFL, especially a 249 running back that can run with the speed he has. He's everything that Eddie Lacy wishes he was.
Yeah, and when it's second and three, he's your guy. But he's not a complete
I'll take him on first and 10 when he rubs a 30-yard run, then a 20-yard run, then a 10-yard run, then a 5-yard run.
I mean, you look at his size and you think maybe he is LeGarrette Blount, but then he turns on those jets and blows by team secondaries for touchdowns. Like, he should not be doing that with his size. Like, he's a physical specimen, and I'm not out here saying he's elite, and neither is Connor.
I'm not saying he's elite.
I think that Tennessee's season would have looked much different if they had not committed to DeMarco Murray as much as head coach Mike
Malarkey. I
want to
see Derrick Henry have a full year where he is the lead back, he is the number one clearly, and gets the majority of the touches all year. That's what I want to see.
I think we'll see that next year.
I think
It seems with DeMarco Murray's injury history, of course, if Mike Malarkey keeps making bad decisions, if he stays in Tennessee, and if they keep making bad decisions, then, you know, maybe DeMarco Murray is getting fed the ball 25 times a game, which he shouldn't be. But, you know, I think Derrick Henry is the future of that running game.
Well, I guess we'll get to bring Eli on next year, and then at the end of the season, see if Derrick Henry is over. But I will say, the beginning subject was, can the Titans beat the Patriots? And we talked a lot about Derrick Henry and everything, and obviously we all believe that the only way the Titans are beating the Patriots is if Derrick Henry has a monster day and really turns the clock and keeps the ball out of Brady's hands. So let's just go around the poll. Do the Titans have a shot at beating the Patriots? Yes or no?
No way.
No.
No. So we can move on because there's no – if the Patriots lose to the Titans, I really got to question a lot of things in the NFL that I thought I knew. Yeah. I'll be honest. So on to the next subject. And let's talk about the best matchup of this upcoming week, the Vikings versus the Saints. I mean, these are two really good teams, and I hate that they have to play each other because I think this would be a great NFC championship. So what is the X factor in this matchup and who will win? I'll start with Eli.
X factor in this matchup. It's tricky to break it down to just one point because you have so many different storylines going on. The Saints look pretty complete. They look like they're set to contend.
I think they're the most complete offense.
Yeah, they're... Well, you know, you have the running back tandem. You've always got Drew Brees there. And then their defense showed up when they needed to.
Yep.
And sometimes that's about all you can say. The Vikings having the extra rest week, I always go back and forth. It's nice to make sure everyone's healthy and on the same page, but it's also a little easy to pick up just that smidge of rust that's ultimately what holds you back once you get to the big game. I'm going to have to go Saints. I think that's the more obvious, easy pick here, maybe just because Drew Brees' experience.
Drew Brees, Casey Keenum. That's basically what you look at it when it comes down to it.
Exactly, exactly. That defense for Minnesota is very good, and I don't think the offense is good enough, Minnesota's offense, to do what they would have to do to win this game.
Well, I really, this matchup is a toss-up in my mind. It really is. I think the Vikings have one of the best defenses in the NFL, right up there, top three unit, and their offense has been very good. I mean, with whatever quarterback's playing back there, I mean, they have possibly the best 1-2 punch in receivers this year in the NFL with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs when they're both on the field. They have a very good tight end in Kyle Rudolph, two complimentary backs, Latavius Murray and Jared McKinnon, and I can clearly see them winning this game. I think they've played great all year. They've been one of my favorite teams to watch. But that same thing goes with the Saints. I mean, you just look at the complimenting things. I mean, Drew Brees is a future Hall of Fame quarterback, two tremendous running backs, a great offensive line, very good receivers. I mean, these teams are just very well-rounded teams, and I'm excited for this matchup before it even starts. If I were to pick an X factor, one player I can signal out, it'd have to be Ted Ginn Jr. in my mind right now. Michael Thomas is going to have Xavier Rhodes on him, and that is a blanket cornerback. I mean, we've seen him blanket some of the best names in the game over the past couple of years. Odell Beckham, Julio Jones. I mean, he does some things that, I mean, it's up there with the elites. So I think that the other receivers are going to have to step up for the Saints. And like the announcer talking about last week, Drew Brees is a big downfield quarterback and loves to take advantage of splash plays. And Ted Ginn Jr. is really that guy. He's still got the elite speed even at his age. And he had a big game last week, had an 80-yard TD catch, 115 yards, 4 receptions. So all it takes is one huge play in this one because the Vikings' defense is so good, and the Saints' defense is good enough to stop the Vikings a decent amount. So one big play like that could completely switch momentum in this game.
Yeah, this game is really interesting to me. And it was funny, like you mentioned, the rest, the week off that the Vikings have had. In week 17, there were two teams that chose to rest their starters, the Chiefs and the Rams. Week 17, they didn't play their starters. The Chiefs put in Patrick Mahomes and a bunch of their other starters, and the Rams went out and put in their backup, Sean Mannion, whatever. They both lost. They both lost because they benched their players, and so it's interesting to see what kind of effect that can go either way.
It really can.
But it's interesting to look at it. You know, these two teams rested their players, and, you know, they both lost. The X factor to me, I didn't think it was an X factor last week, and maybe in hindsight I should have, but it's experience.
Yeah.
And when I didn't look at that, I said the Rams were going to beat the Falcons. And that didn't happen. They weren't experienced enough. The Atlanta looked like they were just prepared to be that. They were ready. They knew the playoff environment, and they just came out there and whooped Los Angeles' tail from the start. So, to me, I think that the Saints kind of have the upper hand because, A, they haven't, you know, been sitting around for a week like Minnesota has, and some of their players don't have as much experience. Drew Brees has been there before. Sean Payton has been there before. This Vikings coaching staff hasn't really been there before, and neither has their quarterback, their young receivers, their running backs. So that's really interesting. I think the X factor is experience. The only other thing that I could think could go against the Saints, unfortunately, while their offensive line is one of the best in the NFL, it's a little banged up right now. You saw one of their best linemen get carted off this past week, and he's going to be out for the rest of the season. This Vikings pass rush is for real, and, you know, one of the best in the league, top three probably. If they can put pressure on these running backs and, you know, put pressure on Brees too, that's going to be the main point of attack for me when I think of how the Vikings are going to game plan against this high-octane offense. But, yeah, in the end, I'm going to think that the Saints pull this out based on experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I really think this game's going to come down to a field goal, overtime, something like that. I don't see any other way. I just think these teams are so well matched up against each other.
Yeah.
And honestly, if this could be the best game of the whole postseason, it could be. I mean, that's what I say, and then we're going to turn around and watch the Titans-Patriots game be the best game of the whole postseason. Right. You never know in the NFL, which is one of the that's part of the reason why I love covering it and why I love watching it so much, you know? Well, I think that wraps it up for our topics this week, guys. So now on to the game picks for the divisional round of the playoffs. So we'll start with the Titans versus Patriots first. We already went through that. So the Titans versus the Patriots, you guys changing your mind at all?
No.
Not even a little bit.
Not even a little bit?
Patriots move on.
Double-digit win. Is it a double-digit win?
Yes.
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 Yes, I'm going to say the same thing. So we're going to go with that. 20? Nah, I'm not going to get into that. So next game, Jaguars versus the Steelers. Who do you got, Blake? I want to hear your...
I love the Jaguars so much. I just wish that they had someone other than Blake Bortles at quarterback.
Why don't you just go with the Jaguars?
I gotta go with the Steelers. Juju Smith-Schuster just said a couple minutes ago, Antonio Brown looks the healthiest he's been all season, looks ready to go.
No way, he would say that.
That's teammates just
hyped. No way.
Still, you know, Le'Veon Bell is just going to tear this. This offense will break down the Jags defense. I honestly think that the Jaguars have an easier time, or are going to have a harder time against the Steelers than they would the Patriots, just because I think the Steelers' offense is so much more dynamic than New England's. So just throw that out there. I think that, but yeah, I'm gonna pick the Steelers. I'm gonna be sad to not see this Jags defense in the playoffs, but I don't expect them to, you know, be out of the playoffs anytime soon in the years to come.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely the Patriots, and. No, the Steelers.
All right, you know, we know you like the Patriots, but we're talking about a different game now.
Yeah, it's almost like it's sad that are these really the best four teams? Was there no middle ground that could have been found in the AFC that was some level between? Well, I mean, for me, that would have kind of been Kansas City. If they'd really gotten themselves together and won and come up more, I would have been like, okay, now that's a team that can maybe do something. But you can't look at Jacksonville. In the same way, you couldn't look at the Bills and be like, maybe they'll do something. Like, there's just no way. Like,
yeah,
why is the AFC so?
Well, you know what the funny thing about you know what the funny thing about that is too. I mean, like, so you're right. These weren't the best teams in the AFC, in my opinion, that made the playoffs. If that were true, the Chargers would have been in there.
Exactly.
That's what I think you were thinking. You know, the Ravens probably would have been in there. I know they're not that great, but they're better than the Titans, once again. They're better than the Bills, probably.
If you look at it, that's
way too far. But I'm just saying, you think about it. All right, before I get it, I read an article right before this and it was like comparing Bill Belichick to Nick Saban when it comes to Domino's Run. And like this guy basically just said that Bill Belichick is so much better, his legacy is so much better than that of Nick Saban's when he comes down to it. Because think of the level in college, like playoffs and everything, they pick the best teams and it doesn't matter a record sometimes. I mean, Alabama's huge loss. There were other teams that had better records than Alabama, but the Alabama got there because they were the best team and that's what the committee saw and everything. It wasn't a matter of they had the best record in college football and everything. They were just the most talented and they could get selected for that. Every year, you could have one of the best teams in the NFL, but certain factors go the wrong way, a ball goes the wrong way, you're not making the Super Bowl. You're not going to get to the final game. That's not how it works. So I just don't know what I'm even talking about anymore. What the heck am I talking about? The freaking... Yeah,
you well, got no, no, I see what you're saying with the playoff.
Yeah, that's what I was just trying to make that point across. I was really keen on that in the beginning.
Can I pose this question, though, with the AFC? Because I know on paper, yeah, there's a lot of different things going on. If you're a Steelers fan, aren't you more nervous if Baltimore's coming to town than Jacksonville's coming to town?
No, I think I'm going to be more nervous. I think people are nervous after Ben Roethlisberger threw 5 interceptions in Week 5. That's why I'm more nervous about the Jaguars at home. They were at home, too. That's why I'm nervous about this game. Maybe Big Ben starts having PTSD in this game and starts thinking.
The only other thing that I think I would rather take Jacksonville in the same way is that while they're both offenses I don't like at all, I think that Jacksonville's is more consistent, especially in the running game. I think that's something that Baltimore lacks. So it's a strong run game. I know it came on late with Alex Collins, and it kind of
Baltimore lacked any semblance of a strong offense. So that's,
I mean, Joe Flacco can't really throw the ball deep that way. They don't have great receivers. So I think I would rather face the Ravens than I would the Jags. And I also just think, you know, even looking at the defenses, I think that Jacksonville's is more young and more, you know, not battle-tested, more tough to face in the postseason because they have fresher legs, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. And you want to say, I mean, Jacksonville's young, but some of the free agents they've picked up has playoff experience. Clay. I mean, Clay's Campbell. Campbell, I mean, Barry Church, even Bouye, wasn't he on the team when the Texans went to
when
the playoffs?
Houston went to playoffs.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So all the free agents they have, they've been to the playoffs before, and they've had career years. Why shouldn't they continue it? So
I just get the sense that it's a foregone conclusion in most people's minds, and if it was Flacco coming, and even maybe that's more of the eye test. Maybe that's more of like, okay, maybe they can do something here. But like with the Jaguars, you know, if you get in the end zone, you're winning the game.
Oh, see, you said some interesting things today. You're trashing Derrick Henry.
You're saying Joe Flacco's elite.
Eli is saying the Joe Flacco's elite.
No.
I really don't. I think we need to go to the next game. Steelers win this one.
Yeah.
Okay. Falcons versus the Eagles. This would have been a way better matchup if Carson Wentz was still here. I think the Eagles would have won this game. Now a lot of people's minds are starting to favor the Falcons. Everybody's pretty much favored them now. What do you think, Blake?
I'm torn on this. There's terrible weather in Philadelphia.
Okay.
Atlanta's been playing all season inside a dome. The interior defense for Philadelphia is great. And, you know, I really like Alex Mack at center for the Falcons. Secondary's come along. I haven't made up my mind yet. You guys start.
Okay,
you
go
guys
ahead.
Start with that.
I mean, I'll go ahead and say it. I'll say it right now. Nick Foles isn't going to win this playoff game. If the Eagles are going to win it, it's like Blake said, it's going to be that interior defensive line. They're going to have to make some big plays on special teams. And I just, the way the Falcons just handled the Rams last week and how they handled Carolina in the Week 17 when they needed a win, the Falcons are playing hot. And I think the Eagles, the Carson Wentz may have hid some more inefficiencies than we like to believe with the Eagles. They also had an easy schedule. But with Carson Wentz, this Eagles team is so much better. I think they're the best team in the NFC with the Carson Wentz. Without him, Nick Foles steps in there. I think they're going to get beat by the Falcons.
Yeah, honestly, I was so wrong last week. I really believed in the Rams a lot. I thought for sure they were winning that game. And the Falcons just, like you said, they showed they'd been there before. They were poised and made the plays they needed to make. And that's the way I'm going to lean this week, too. I think they're going to go into Philly and just find a way to win.
Yep.
And sometimes it's as simple as that. I mean, they really did surprise me last week.
Yep. right.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to go with Atlanta, too. I guess that also just comes into the experience thing again. I really wish that Carson Wentz was in this game. It'd be an amazing matchup to watch. But I'm going to take the Falcons. I think it's going to be a lot closer than some people think. I think this could be, you know, a 3-4 game. Given, you know, weather conditions, we'll see what that's like in Philadelphia. I'm going to stick with the Falcons. I just think they get the job done with more experience. They've been there.
Gotcha. So, on to the final game of the week. Saints versus the Vikings. That's what it is. Okay, Saints versus the Vikings, which should be the game of the week. Well, let's start with you, Eli. What do you got?
Like we talked about earlier, I just think Drew Brees has too much on the line. At this point in his career, he's really gunning for another one. And the Vikings having rested. Interestingly enough, if the Vikings hadn't been off last week, I think I'd be more prone to pick them. But they've had this rest. They've kind of just been obviously preparing, but I don't know. With Case Keenum there, without that real like electric offense, like they're solid, but they're not going and winning games based on their offense. It's all on their defense, and I really just see the Saints pulling out in this one. Like again, last week they found a way to win, This team I think they stay hot.
Yeah, I really just this game is once again a toss up, and like, just like the first Saints game, and I'm gonna go with. Basically, when it comes down to it, Drew Brees, Case Keenum. Which one am I going to pick? I'm going to pick Drew Brees because the rest of the teams match up so well. I think they both have different strengths, but in the end, I think the Saints just a little bit better. What do you think, Blake?
Oh man, this is also just a tough one. Maybe he's tougher to pick than Falcons, Eagles in your guys' mind, but I really think that the Saints are going to struggle with that offensive line being banged up.
Yeah, then go with the Vikings.
Give me the Vikings.
I'm going to give you the Vikings.
I'm they're at home. I know I just counteracted myself when I talked about the rest that they had this past week and how the other teams that rested the week before had lost. That pass rush in Minnesota is probably second to best when behind Jacksonville. And, you know, if some of these linemen aren't ready to suit up, then, you know, that's going to be tough. And like you said, you know, maybe that comes down to a Ted Ginn touchdown that I just can't predict right now, but I really think that Xavier Rhodes is going to do a good job against Michael Thomas. On the offensive side of the ball, I'm not terribly impressed with the Saints' front seven. I like their cornerbacks, but I don't like, you know, Manti Te'o is over there. They're missing A.J. Klein. They're banged up on the defensive side of the ball, and their pass rush isn't that great either. And so I don't think Minnesota's offense has to go out there and win the game. I think it's a situation where you need to put up a decent amount of points and let your defense do the job. Minnesota's riding this, and I think they're gonna ride it to the Super Bowl. I think right now they're my NFC Super Bowl favorites, so I'm gonna pick Minnesota.
All right, well there we go. Now we have a differing pick, so we don't have to write an identical record next week.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I think that's about it for this week. Anything else to add?
No. Should be a good week of football.
Glad to have you on the show again, Eli. We'll catch you again next week, guys.
Sounds good.
Take care.